Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So, you know, in a few years I'll be bionic, folks, okay? I'll be like Metallo. That's the villain in Superman. You know, he's all metal and all that. Micah Hanks has joined us. I have no idea why we're talking about this. He will also be hanging out for after the Paracast because we roped him in. And he knows that if he says no, a hand will come through his computer display and go right to his neck.
Like in the cartoons.
That did happen one time when I tried to say I couldn't do it. You know, this, I mean, it was incredible. It, like, defied physics. And that's why I now believe in UFOs, because I've experienced the otherworldly, or at least that menacing hand reaching through the computer screen and saying, you will be a part of After the Paracast.
That, unfortunately, is such a cliche. They even did it on the Supergirl TV show, where they had a scene there where the computer nerd is trying to do something to help Supergirl, and then the hand from the villain comes in and grabs him by the neck.
Didn't that all start with Poltergeist or something? You know, the TV screen with it suddenly blurbing out,
"They're here."
Yeah, you know, with the little girl watching and the static on the TV screen. And it, have either of you guys ever actually done that? What, you remember when you used to have over-the-air broadcasts and you could tune your channel to the static? Have you ever watched the static?
It would have been many years ago if I had.
Yeah. Well, you see, I remember that as a kid because you had a situation here where TV stations would actually go off the air, not just leave a test pattern at night, which some did. It'd go off the air, and then you'd get the static. So that has a sense of reality to it. So then if you're going to do a horror movie or something and you attach something sinister to the static,
that's almost kind of like the whole idea of the, you know, the electromagnetic detection, except REM pods don't have a screen or anything. But how about the rest of the world of the paranormal, Micah?
In what capacity do you mean?
Well, like we're thinking, you know, we talk about aliens, we talk about alien visitation in science, and it all tends to be related to that. But what about the idea of hauntings, life after death, near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, telepathy, that sort of thing? Do you have an interest in that stuff as well?
You might say that I have an interest in all things that are, as Charles Fort would have said, part of the procession of the damned. All those things which are left out, the excluded, right, that he said shall march. Yeah, I am very much in that sense a Fortean. I love the work of the late American physicist William R. Corliss, who I actually mentioned earlier. And I have, you know, collected over the years those source books that he published, where essentially what he does as a physicist, but with an interest in Fortiana, he goes back and he kind of collects information on a lot of the same sorts of things that Fort wrote about. And he puts together these incredible source books full of that kind of material, but sourced from scientific publications, which actually, in truth, Fort did that too. So I've kind of always considered myself a science-minded Fortean, kind of like William R. Corliss. And even though through science and the accumulation of understanding and knowledge over time, we are able to look back on some of those mysteries from the past and we can explain them, I'm nonetheless very much an advocate, like Fort and like Corliss, of the study of anomalies. Because like Corliss used to say, anomalies do cause us to have to stretch our field in terms of the scope of reality that we're looking at and operating within. And it causes us to have to really rethink some fundamental forces of nature. Again, like what we talked about earlier with meteors, fireballs, what have you. That's a great example because people think of this as a very mundane phenomena today. But so little as 150 years ago, it was very mysterious. People didn't understand what meteors and meteorites actually were. They had no concept of rocks actually falling, an actual meteorite, falling, making its way through the atmosphere and landing on the Earth. And anyone who proposed that would have called it, yet again, pseudoscience. Now, the problem is that in the sense of meteors, actual, you know, objects that in some instances they can actually pass through our atmosphere and actually exit and go back out into space in some rare instances. But most, if they actually enter Earth's atmosphere, they're going to burn up as they're coming down. And so there is no actual residuum apart from the vapor trail that's left in the atmosphere, which may remain visible for some time. Because of that, and because of how rare the actual stones falling to Earth were, many viewed meteors as being some kind of an atmospheric phenomena.
Well, actually, that's a really interesting point, because even today, right now, in the astronomical context, there's a meteorological context as well. But if you actually look up what a meteor is considered to be in terms of this definition, the International Astronomy Union, the IAU, defines a meteor as the light and associated physical phenomena, heat, shock, ionization, which result from the high-speed entry of a solid object from space into a gaseous atmosphere. So the meteor is actually a phenomena, but its cause is an object. So now that kind of puts a bit of an interesting spin on this. If we're dealing with phenomena that are caused by objects, then what is the cause of the UAP?
Well, yeah.
If it's not an object, what is it?
But again, as I was pointing out earlier, even, I mean, with regard to meteors and the associated phenomena, that's, by the way, what you just pointed out, Randall, is very, very interesting. Yet again, we look at what most people think of when we hear a word like meteor, but the actual definition, according to astronomers who use it, they're describing also the associated phenomena, and some of that is still little understood. We have mechanisms for understanding the apparent coincidence of sounds with immediate observations of meteors, but again, we know that the way that sound travels should not allow for that. And so there are proposed mechanisms, a number of science papers that have appeared at least since the late 1970s, I believe, that have sought to explain that phenomenon. But that's an example of something that remains at least somewhat partially unexplained about a well-known and established phenomena. But again, you know, then there's that semantic aspect of it too. So to me, it's kind of fascinating. And again, I will often refer to fireballs as being a good example of a phenomena that is a fairly recently understood phenomena, some aspects of which are still little understood and which we still have a lot of problems with in terms of how we refer to them and what we mean when we say the various different names for the different manifestations of that phenomena. It's a great corollary in a lot of ways for UAP. But now back to your earlier question, you know, the paranormal, for instance, does interest me, but there are certain areas that interest me more than others. And there are others that maybe I would even say I don't find very interesting because I just find them kind of unlikely. I did talk with Jim B. Tucker from the University of Virginia a while back, and, you know, he's done a lot of this research with past lives reported by children. Some of those cases are very interesting to me. Not enough that I think I would devote my entire life to trying to resolve that question, as he admirably has done and as Ian Stevenson did before him. But even Carl Sagan in The Demon Haunted World, a book that I recommend everybody read. I think it's a fascinating read, even though he was much more on the skeptical side of things. One of the things that I took away from that book was Sagan actually saying, however dubious some of that past life phenomena may seem, he says some of the cases are interesting enough that they warrant further examination. Now, before Stanton Friedman passed away, I recall talking with him about Sagan because, you know, they, of course, were in the same graduating class from Chicago University. And I asked him one time, we were riding up through Riverside, California, and we stopped there for lunch one day. And I said to Stanton, I said, did you keep in touch with Carl Sagan later in life? He said, keep in touch? Of course, we went to the same school, you know. And I said, so you guys, like, stayed friends? He said, oh, yeah. And he said that Ann had arranged for Stanton, when he was giving one of his lectures, to actually come by Carl's house. And they had, like, coffee cake and hung out and talked in the living room one afternoon. And Stan had kind of been like, Carl, you must understand that there's something to this, the UFOs. And that Carl essentially says, well, of course, I think there's probably something to it. But the problem is, if I give myself to that and I come out and I publicly discuss that, you know, there's funding, there is credibility, all these problems. And so that you know, Sagan had essentially privately said to Stanton, yeah, I'm interested in this phenomena, but I can't just go out there and publicly become an advocate for it like you are. But really, if you read The Demon Haunted World, skeptical though he was, and as much as he towed that skeptical line, anybody who reads that book will immediately become aware of the fact that Sagan was very interested in UFOs, and he seemed to have maintained that interest throughout his career.
Let's continue with more of this on the other side with Gene Randall and Micah. You're in
the Paracast.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
It's about time for the 15th anniversary of Sunny Bay. And it may be our 15-year anniversary, but it's your chance at winning from weekly drawings in our contest for better health. We owe our success to you, GCN listeners. So as our thanks, you may win our grand prize, an Amazon gift card, plus Sunny Bay's complete set of superior pain relief products and services with a total prize value up to $4,152. How do you enter the Sunny Bay 15th anniversary contest for better health? Easy. Just click sunny-bay.com. No purchase necessary. Remember, there will be weekly drawings. Yes, it's our 15th anniversary, and it's your chance to win in Sunny Bay's 15th anniversary contest for better health. For complete contest rules and prize values, visit sunny-bay.com. That's sunny-bay.com.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
We have all seen and perhaps used the alcohol-based hand sanitizers. Have you ever noticed how it dries your skin, and as soon as the alcohol evaporates, it's no longer effective? With bacteria and virus problems, sanitizers and hand washing are the first line of defense against infectious disease. GCNteam.com has alcohol-free antibacterial soap and foam meeting or exceeding all requirements as set forth by the United States Food and Drug Administration as a first aid antiseptic. When it comes to sanitizers, it only makes sense that it lasts till the next application and doesn't dry and crack your skin, inviting infection. For long-lasting alcohol-free sanitizing, come to GCNteam.com keyword antibacterial. That's GCNteam.com, antibacterial, or call 877-878-4203. 877-878-4203.
Anytime, any place, anywhere, radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
That was an interesting thing there, because it certainly confirms things I heard about Sagan, that he was looking at his paycheck and the impact to his paycheck in taking the public point of view he did about UFOs. And we can see where the private man was certainly different. Now, right. By the way, I wanted to bring this up because it occurred to me as soon as we got into Fort Hinn and Charles Fort. And I was looking at Amazon. They offer a paperback version of the complete books of Charles Fort, all four books, for $24.49. But the hardcover version is $184.32, so we don't want to get into that. The question I have more to the point, as a confirmed Fort Hinn yourself, and probably I'm in that category, does anyone know anymore who Charles Fort was? I mean, remember that we're talking about somebody whose last books were published around 100 years ago.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing to think that it's been that long since he passed. Yeah, a lot of people do know who he was, but a lot also don't. And I'll share a funny anecdote with you. I did a blog post a while back that was something along the lines of, like, here's a handful of mysterious Fortean disappearances that remain unexplained, or something like that. And somebody had, like, commented on the article, and they wrote 14 and put, like, a wink. They literally thought I had just misspelled the word 14. They're like, dude, glaring typo. And I'm like, wow, people really don't know what Fortean means or where that expression comes from. But again, for anyone who still wonders about that, Charles Hoy Fort, in the early part of the last century, he had actually been a journalist. He had been kind of like a travel writer, an outdoor writer, wrote a lot of both interesting and at times hilarious stuff. But at some point, you know, with the modest inheritance that he had, Fort ended up going and spending a lot of time at the New York Public Library. The one time I actually visited that library, Peter Robbins, of course, and I were hanging out in New York, and he took me all around New York one day, and we actually visited where Fort did a lot of his work. He also spent some time in London doing the same thing, painstakingly going through newspaper archives, publications like Scientific American and a number of others, the journals of Meteorological Society and what have you, and looking for anomalous occurrences. Interestingly, a lot of the occurrences that Fort actually wrote about, he harvested from scientific publications of his day. You know, again, he was an early progenitor, really, of, I mean, I've actually heard one of his biographers refers to him as the man who invented the paranormal. He isn't the man who invented it by any means, but he certainly is probably the most notable person in the 20th century and maybe throughout history who began to systematically look at it and try to categorize it in some way and to, you know, kind of create different groups. And I really think that Corliss, after him, did incredible work in terms of further breaking down into categories, looking at atmospheric phenomena, you know, looking at biological anomalies, you know, looking at the sun and the solar system and, you know, phenomena that occurs in space. He's looking at a variety of different areas, and he was essentially trying to do more scientifically and in the different areas of the sciences what Fort had begun to do in the early part of the 20th century. Anyone who's interested in UFOs needs to know about who Charles Fort was, because even as early as the Book of the Damned, his very first book that looked at anomalies, Fort was documenting aerial phenomena well in advance of 1947. And, you know, when you had Gordon Lohr and some of those guys who were associated with NICAP back in the 1950s and 60s, Gordon Lohr and others, when they, Denault also, his co-author of the book Mysteries of the Skies, when they began to look back at the Fortean literature, they, of course, and others, had begun to notice that Fort seems to have been documenting aerial phenomena. Yeah, he was documenting UFOs as we would recognize them today. So there also was the work over the years of Lohr and Gross, who was an amateur historian, but again, you can read his self-published books online. I think, in fact, they've been made available probably at the Center for UFO Studies website, and also there at the Science Oral History Project website. Just go on Google and search for those. You know, Lauren Gross, as far as a historian who looked at UFOs, amateur though he was, he did great work, and he was hyper aware of the influence that Fort and the Fortean Society after Charles Fort, what influence they had on early ufology. Anyone who says that the phenomenon began in 1947 hasn't read Charles Fort. Again, Fort was documenting aerial anomalies much earlier.
If you're a student of ufology, you can find cases that go all the way back to ancient Mesopotamia if you want. I'd just like to back up a little bit and go back to the points you were making about meteors. This is a personal experience that I actually had. I'm not sure if you guys have heard of this, but it's the Great Daylight Fireball of 1972, because you had mentioned fireballs, Micah, previously, and people reporting that they'd heard sounds associated with them. This is one that was recorded on film. It was captured by spaceborne detectors. And there was an eyewitness in Montana who says that they heard a double sonic boom as well. It was really, like, quite interesting to see because it was total daytime. And you could not miss this thing. And we watched it for several seconds until it went out of view.
How fascinating, yeah. I'm not familiar with that one. But there was a similar instance in 1978, I believe, over Australia, where there was a massive fireball that was observed. And again, the strange, you know, auditory phenomena associated with it. But I actually find a lot of these, you know, various kinds of meteorological phenomena very interesting. Now, again, by definition, really, if we're talking about meteors, somebody's going to say, well, that's actually technically celestial phenomena, which is a little confusing because when we talk about weather, we say meteorological, but when we talk about meteors, we say celestial. Anyway, not to split hairs.
Yeah, well, I mean, splitting hairs is our middle name here.
If you got to do it right.
Well, you know what? We use a very big scissor. We don't just split hairs. We do it very carefully.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I'll tell you something that I hear you guys only very seldom talk about on this program, and I've got to go there. Sasquatch. I think you guys had Jeffrey Meldrum on some time ago, Gene. But apart from the UFO question, again, Sasquatch is something, the possible biological reality of what Jeffrey Meldrum would term a relict hominid, or I'm sorry, relict hominoid. That's how he prefers to say it. That fascinates me. And again, I see a lot of corollaries with ufology. No, I do not associate those two phenomena. With all respect to Stan Gordon and some others who have, you know, written about that angle over the years. But again, if so many people have claimed to have seen this purported creature, and they are all myths or hoaxes or misperceptions or what have you, again, the true anomaly to me is in human perception and trying to understand human psychology rather than the purported existence of the creature. Because again, there is so much data and so much consistency in the reports that to me, I find it hard not to think that there is at least something to the idea of this animal, which Meldrum and others, of course, are scientific proponents of its existence.
Okay, let's back up a little bit with this and tie this together with the previous element of our conversation, that is the connection between UFOs, alien visitation, and other paranormal types of events. Now, you were just saying that you seem to, or it sounded to me, that you have a resistance to making any connection between Bigfoot or Sasquatch and alien visitation. But there are all kinds of other phenomena as well. And when we were talking about Charles Fort, the connections are inescapable because they just always seem to go together or at least have high correlation.
Let's do a break here. We got more to correlate with Gene, Randall, and Micah. You're in
the Paracast.
Listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you want to give you and your loved ones premium nutrition right now? Hi, I'm Jamel Bookaboo from TeamGaday.com and the GCN Longevity Health Team. Get your premium nutrition formulated by world-renowned naturopathic doctor, Dr. Joel Wallach at wholesale, or also become a distributor and earn income while supporting this broadcast. Go to TeamGaday.com via the shopping cart or contact form, and I'll get back to you with support personally. That's TeamGaday.com with Longevity. TeamGaday.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
USA Radio News.
I'm Brad Bernards. A powerful earthquake struck Haiti on Saturday morning, killing at least 304 people and leaving hundreds of others hurt, authorities said. The 7.2 magnitude quake was strong enough to be felt in neighboring countries.
Haitian officials said more than 1,800 people were injured in the disaster, some of whom were being treated in hospitals in the three most affected communities. The epicenter of the quake was about 78 miles west of the capital, Port-au-Prince. The nation's inflation is growing because President Joe Biden is blocking the production of goods and services at a time when demand is at an all-time high following lockdowns due to the COVID pandemic, former presidential advisor and Newsmax show host Dick Morris said Saturday.
So you're limiting supply, you're swelling the demand, and of course you're going to get this crazy inflation.
This is USA Radio News. New York Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul, a former congresswoman, has mostly labored in obscurity under Governor Cuomo, but as the New York's first female governor, she will almost certainly face a bruising primary battle in 2022. She does intend to run.
I fully expect to. I'm prepared for this. I've led a life working in every level of government, from Congress to local government. I'm the most prepared person to assume this responsibility, and I'm going to ask the voters at some point for their faith in me again, but right now, I need their faith, I need their prayers, and I need their support to make sure we get this right.
President Joe Biden announced Saturday that he is deploying more troops to Afghanistan to ensure that U.S. personnel can be evacuated safely. The Biden administration will brief House members on Afghanistan virtually Sunday morning and will be over unclassified material, according to reports. An in-person classified briefing on the situation will reportedly be held next week. This is USA Radio News.
Oh, whale! Guys, whale! Wow, whale!
Oh, that's a big whale. Okay, whale, whale, whale! Oh no, whale!
The tides can turn quick on the water. Progressive's boat insurance has you covered. Get a quote today in as little as 3 minutes at progressive.com.
Well, at least it wasn't a shark, am I right?
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
Angie's List is now Angie. Summer is the perfect time to book your next home project. From lawn care to a new patio, Angie makes it simple to connect with pros who can get the job done right. See reviews, upfront pricing, and instantly book hundreds of projects. Plus, when you book and pay through Angie, we'll cover your project up to the full purchase price, plus limited damage protection with our happiness guarantee. Check out Angie.com, and for more on the happiness guarantee, go to Angie.com/happiness-guarantee.htm.
Hi, this is Bryce Abel. I'm the producer of Dark Skies, the co-author of AD After Disclosure, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Okay, Randall, proceed with the conversation.
Right, yeah. So I was just saying before the break that we've interviewed a lot of people now, and I've been taking kind of an informal poll of their experiences in their investigations into the paranormal, and these are people who are not necessarily ufologists or even all that interested in UFOs. But it turns out that there is a very high correlation between other kinds of paranormal phenomena and UFO sightings in terms of their location and frequency and pretty much all the rest. So why would you be resistant to the idea that maybe our alien visitors have something to do with this?
Maybe they're pets, Randall. Maybe they are the pets. I don't mean to sound flippant.
No, but you did a pretty good Sagan impression back there, too, by the way. So
yeah.
I don't mind a little humor. I
don't mind. We need more of it, and that's the whole thing. I mean, I'm a person who takes himself – well, I don't take myself very seriously, but I take these subjects very seriously. I mean, I am serious as a heart attack when I am, you know, in my journalistic mindset, and I'm there at the debrief, and I'm writing a breakdown where I've been hounding a government agency for 3 weeks trying to get a statement. You know, I've just gotten a FOIA release. You know, I've gone and interviewed experts on the field, and I'm putting together an article. I mean, yeah, that's at me at my most serious. But there has to be a balance where you're also entertaining humor, too. And I'd been corresponding with Diana Pasulka the other day, you know, author of American Cosmic. And she had written to me and said, you know, something I appreciate about you, Mike, is that you've never lost that sense of humor that you have about things. So, but as far as Sasquatch and a possible connection with UFOs or any kind of interrelationship between these various different kinds of phenomena, again, I always fall back on this one, the old adage, and actually it's really, I think, a fundamental tenet of science and the scientific method. Correlation does not necessarily mean causation. There are a lot of different things that may appear to be correlated, but that doesn't mean that there's an actual direct association between them. And so when it comes to Sasquatch and UFOs, I have to say that there are a variety of ways that we could see an apparent connection between them, but the question we have to ask is, are those things truly related?
Sure. You know, and I've heard that same adage as well. But I think that we'd have to recognize that the higher the correlation, the more likely it is that it is a causal factor. People will do this with consciousness all the time. They'll say, well, just because consciousness is associated with a functioning brain doesn't mean that the functioning brain is causal of consciousness. And I kind of go, look, that's really stretching that whole concept a lot, because to my knowledge, there is really no good evidence that somebody who's brain dead has any consciousness whatsoever. Yeah, I get what you're saying, but we can't just use it to say, well, just because causation doesn't equal correlation and correlation doesn't equal causation, that there's not a connection either. Because it, statistically speaking, there is. The more often that you do an experiment and it turns out the same way every single time, the more reasonable it becomes to assume that it is causal.
Fair point. Now, let me throw that back at you. Now, while we could talk all day about the possible connections, and again, I'll entertain that point that there may indeed be some connections. Yet again, like we were discussing with the extraterrestrial hypothesis and why people are proponents of it, you know, I myself have certain sympathies for that hypothesis, but like Gene, I stop short of endorsing it and saying I think that that's something, because I don't like to necessarily draw conclusions if I don't have enough evidence. But I'll entertain a hypothesis all day. Now, similarly with Sasquatch, my preferential hypothesis, we might say, would be that, well, we should look at this in terms of the scope of biology before we go to extraordinary means to try and explain something when that is unnecessary. But now, as you mentioned, with the questions about consciousness, that's an interesting one, because, yeah, we wouldn't necessarily connect human awareness with something apart from the brain, the mind, right? Now, there are some interesting studies that seem to show the potential for the consciousness to escape the body itself. But a fascinating area there for me is plants. We would never consider plants, you know, which actually don't have brains, right? Plants which are, apart from their ability to very gradually shift their position so that they can attract or collect more sunlight with their leaves, they're essentially immobile. And yet, if we look at the evolutionary history of plants, right, their preferential production of rewards in the form of fruit that they produce so that animals, mammals, birds, you know, reptiles, what have you, that consume the fruits that they produce will help them to procreate. When we think about the way that they have evolved, I mean, it's incredible. If you look at, like, certain varieties of plant whose incredibly – how would you term this? They produce a budding flower that is – so perfectly harmonious with the anatomy of insect pollinators.
But that makes perfect sense in terms of evolution, because
a lot of sense.
The better that something works out in terms of survival, the more likely it will be that that organism will survive. And therefore, over time, it finely tunes itself just naturally as a consequence of survival.
I mean, that does make sense. It makes perfect sense, and we see exactly why it happens. But, I mean, that makes it no less mysterious to me. I mean, like, for instance, we think about carrion flowers, right? I raised this point recently on one of my podcasts. A flower that, unlike most plants with their successful strategy of attracting pollinators, having a beautiful bloom and a wonderful fragrance, you know, some of them even produce pollen and then dummy pollen. The dummy pollen, which is explicitly a food, but the real pollen, which actually is dusted over the top of the insect, which thereby actually is procreative for the plant. I mean, that's fascinating in itself, that they create dummy pollen, some plants, like the Brazil nut tree, for example, is one that does that. But carrion flowers, on the other hand, have this other bizarre strategy that they employ where they smell like rotting flesh and sometimes look like it.
Right, yeah.
The question I have is, now again, I'm anthropomorphizing this for the purpose of both humor and also to get us all thinking about it, but how does the plant know to smell like rotting flesh? How does it even know what rotting flesh smells like? It hasn't got a nose.
It doesn't have to. So don't let me interrupt. You're going to make a point here.
I think
go ahead.
Again, yeah, it doesn't have to, because what it's doing may not actually be replicating the scent of rotting flesh, but nonetheless, it effectively does that, and convincingly so even for humans who get close enough to smell the said carrion flower. I mean, these are incredibly mysterious phenomena to me, which, again, an evolutionary biologist would say nothing mysterious at all. This is evolution. And these are adaptations over time that occur. I mean, these are well-understood processes. But I'm thinking to myself, guys, think about how incredibly successful, though, plants have over time, over a long time. Talk about patience. They incredibly successfully employ these evolutionary strategies harmoniously with other kinds of organisms. Now, my question is, can we really say that those plants don't have some level of awareness? I don't really think that's a kooky idea. If you read Michael Pollan, and again, this is a burgeoning field, you know, plant neurobiology, Michael Pollan and others would actually argue that plants may be far more aware of what's happening around them than humans would ever expect. And increasingly over time, science seems to be supporting that kind of an idea.
Oh, yeah, but then what do you mean by awareness? I mean, that can become a convenience term for an ability to detect and react, but not necessarily a synonym with consciousness.
Right. Are you guys familiar with a book that came out a number of years ago, The Secret Life of Plants?
Oh, yeah, I've got a copy right here.
Tell our listeners about this. This is fascinating.
Well, yeah, let me see if I can actually reach it on my shelf. Where is my copy of it? Now I'm looking down and I'm, where is it? Well, I see Lyle Watson's Supernature down there, but we can go, do a brief summary. The Secret Life of Plants. Now, there are some things in that book that, again, I find highly dubious, but it was a book, essentially one of the early ones, when was it published? Gene, probably the 1970s, that puts forward the idea that there are all these mysterious qualities about plants. And in fact, actually, Lyle Watson with Supernature and some of his other books, he also was, a scientist who proposed similar ideas. But one of the classic experiments that's discussed in The Secret Life of Plants had been Clive Baxter and his studies, where he used a polygraph machine, and he was initially trying to basically see if it would register on a polygraph when he held a flame next to the leaf of a plant.
Before we find out what happened when he held that flame, we're going to light up these announcements. That was the worst segue I've done yet, and I've done many bad ones. More to come with Micah, Gene, and Randall. You're in
the purple.
For listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Right now, millions of Americans have an uneasy feeling about the future. That's why they're quietly stockpiling as much emergency food as they can. What about you? Do you have enough emergency food to get you through a prolonged crisis? If not, take a moment to shop My Patriot Supply. We're America's leader in emergency preparedness and survival. Since 2008, we've served several million American families like yours. In fact, our mission is your survival. So head on over to MyPatriotSupply.com and grab a few of our tasty emergency food kits. Our food stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage and is shipped quickly and discreetly to your door. One day, you might be eating breakfast, lunch, or dinner while everyone else is standing in a food line. Avoid that. It's too late to act once the other shoe drops. It's time to be self-reliant and prepared. And now you can. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Amazon customer: it's amazing. I just ordered my second bottle. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after I exercise. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off of BP meds. and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. Amazon customer, Extendivite works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. Amazon customer, excellent herbal formula. I've been using it to keep my cardiovascular system fine-tuned. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a two-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
I am a non-attorney spokesperson representing a team of lawyers who've helped people that have been injured or wronged. Have you been diagnosed with cancer? Are you one of the millions who have taken Zantac or other generic versions of this popular drug to help treat stomach issues? Then pay close attention to this message. The FDA said it detected low levels of a probable cancer-causing chemical known as NDMA in Zantac and other generic forms of this popular drug. They've banned sales and even removed it from the market. If you've been diagnosed with cancer and you've taken Zantac or a generic equivalent, call the legal helpline now. You could receive a free cash award and have your medical expenses covered. And there's no upfront cost to you. They only get paid if you win. So please call now. 800-998-7173. 800-998-7173. 800-998-7173. That's 800-998-7173.
This is Jacques Vallée, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
I think he is becoming a resident of the Little Shop of Horrors, J. Randall Murphy. And that's not what I was talking about. I'm talking about The Secret Life of Plants. In The Secret Life of Plants, there's this polygraph experiment. You're going to tell us about Micah Hanks?
Yeah, and I have some reservations about this one. And as fascinated as I am with plants and their unique capabilities, which, again, maybe it is fair to argue evolutionarily they aren't that mysterious, but I find them really fascinating because they really cause us to have to rethink how we generally think of plants. You mean all that green stuff that grows in my yard? No, I mean, plants are organisms. They are alive. And that just, to me, is really, truly incredible. But
what you were going to do, though, is you were, I believe, get to the experiment where the plants seem to be able to sense danger.
That was what was implied. And again, that's why I say, fascinating, though, I think plants are, we've got to really be careful in terms of endorsing this idea. But now, what was outlined by Cleve Baxter in the experiments, and this was a significant part of the book in question, Baxter had used polygraphs to, I think, try to measure, I believe he was trying to see if the polygraph would register the water being absorbed by the plant, and if this would register. So anyway, as he goes over at one point, he's going to snip like one of the leaves off. This is all from memory, folks. And he says that the polygraph seemed to register a response from the plant as he approached it. And so he begins to conduct experiments where he's going to hold like a lighter underneath a leaf to see if the plant will respond to a flame being held under one of its leaves. In many instances, and here's part of the problem with this study, the plant didn't appear to respond. But in some, he noticed that even just thinking about harming the plant seemed to elicit a response, which was measurable on the polygraph. Part of the problem, of course, that we see here is that it didn't seem like what he was observing and what he claimed might be a response being issued by the plant, it didn't seem to be entirely repeatable, that the plant would, quote-unquote, as he termed it, Cleve Baxter used to say that the plant would scream sometimes if it perceived that it was going to be injured. It very well may be that there was some sort of response being issued by the plant. Now, what's more interesting to me than the speculations that Cleve Baxter presented, which were outlined in the book that Gene mentioned, is that just a few years ago there was a study that found that certain varieties of plant species, if, for instance, caterpillars or some other kind of an insect, different kinds of bugs, okay, that would eat plants, if they show up and they begin to actually snack on the plant's leaves, certain varieties of plants will produce a kind of gas that will be carried through the wind and that other plants, of course, can register. They can use this to detect, okay, well, there is a predator nearby. You know, there will be bugs in my vicinity soon that will actually consume my leaves, and this could also endanger me. And the plants in that area will respond by producing enzymes that cause their leaves to take on a bitter flavor for insects or you know, caterpillars or whatever else that may actually be consuming said plant.
That's totally interesting. And but again, I guess, you know, there's that assumption that the plants somehow know, and therefore the alarm is set. The plant is thinking danger, Will Robinson. But really, I mean, it could be just simply a detection reaction chemistry type of thing. Yeah. The plant has actually zero idea.
Exactly.
But that doesn't make it less fascinating. Like, have you ever seen those time-lapse studies that they've done of plants? They've done some that are in jungles, do time lapse of the jungle. Basically, the plants are at war with each other. It's really bizarre.
Well, the plants definitely do move very slowly, and they definitely interact. And just one more point about the whole thing about, you know, gases be emitted by a plant to warn other plants nearby effectively. Again, even if it's just a sort of a response to their leaves being consumed, right? The point I'm making is that I wonder if something like that, which had not been known at the time that Cleve Baxter did his studies, could that have been what he was actually observing, but he interpreted that as being something like a consciousness, the plant was aware. You see what I'm saying? I think that it would have been that there was something that was far simpler, but which was unknown to him at the time, which might explain what he observed. And of course, he was called a crackpot because he inherently anthropomorphized what he observed.
Right.
Science may offer us a better explanation today, but yes, like you said, no less fascinating. And indeed, even though many of these mechanisms, as time goes on, are better understood today, it has come to pass that I think we've learned a lot of things about plants that we didn't know, some of which explain what were perceived as really anomalous things years ago. They are far less anomalous, but they're nonetheless interesting in terms of really how they broaden our understanding of how plants live.
Behavior. Movement is a kind of behavior.
Sure.
You know, but this is really interesting because we get people on who are very interested in consciousness. We have a major thread on the forum that delves into the whole concept of consciousness. And really, we could say the same thing about the brain. Well, it's all just chemicals reacting, bioelectrical feedback resonance loops. But that doesn't explain how we have any experience of it. Right? If we weren't us and we didn't know that we have consciousness, some alien out there might think that we're not really much different than the plants. We just are these bioelectrical beings that go around following our instincts.
We're not?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
you know, maybe that's what they're really interested in. Human beings seem to have this extra thing about them that is kind of unpredictable in terms of simple biological and electrochemical responses. Maybe they don't have the same kind of experience of the world as we do.
Right. Michio Kaku and many others will frequently use the example of why would aliens necessarily pay attention to us, right? We think about how humans treat the nest of ants over there next to the sidewalk. They don't pay attention to a colony of ants. They aren't thinking of trying to go over there and communicate with them. In a lot of ways, plants might be an even better example of that, because while we are aware of insects, especially if one, you know, bites us or if we have an infestation in our house, same with arachnids or anything else, we pay attention to those guys. But with plants, we often are completely oblivious to the plants all around us, the living organisms that are all around us. And I wonder, could a significantly more advanced intelligence, if they visited Earth and came here, could they view humans much like we view plants, in the sense that they recognize we're alive, but they're like, yeah, but those guys aren't, you know, fill in the blank, whatever we would call conscious or what have you. They don't, for whatever reason, view humans as being even on their radar.
I mean, yes, but there's a difference here, too. There is evidence of human technology all around us. So it's not just a bunch of creatures running around that we could accept or dismiss. And that would be the dilemma that E.T. would certainly face. Not just the fact that we are here, but we are doing things that are obvious. And since they evade us, we know they are aware of our presence. We can get into more of this in After the Paracast, Micah, but tell us now, for those who are very, very curious, as they should be, how do we find more of your stuff?
Indeed, yes. Of course, my personal website is MicahHanks.com. You can find all my podcasts and things there. And Of course, I also am the co-founder and one of the many contributors, along with my buddies Tim McMillan and MJ Benias, who's been on the program in the past and talked about it. We, of course, co-founded The Debrief last December. The Debrief, of course, features a lot of science and disruptive technology, but there's a fair amount of UFO reporting there, too, because it's a timely subject. So definitely check me out at MicahHanks.com and also the reporting that the team and I do there at TheDebrief.org.
And by the way, at The Debrief, they'll send you a newsletter with updates, so you will not forget to go back there and read some of their fascinating articles. You can find us on Twitter if you look for the Paracast. You can find us on Facebook if you look for two Paracast groups, fan clubs, whatever. But they're currently not allowing us to post our links to here. So they're really strange. I'm trying to get them to straighten it out and figure out what's going on. To straighten up and fly right. We also offer branded merchandise at theparacast.shop, theparacast.shop, where we have the logo, the original logo for the Paracast, the caricature of me that frightens everybody that was done by Red Pill Junkie. We also have some original artwork from J. Randall Murphy. We have the T-shirts and all that good stuff at theparacast.shop. We also have the Paracast Plus, where you get this show free of the network ads, better audio, and the After the Paracast podcast that often includes extra content from our special guests, like it does this week with Micah Hanks. We also are offering for lifetime subscriptions a 20% discount. So when you check out at theparacast.plus, that's theparacast.plus, use the keyword or coupon code UFO20 for additional 20% discount on lifetime subs, theparacast.plus. Micah Hanks, thank you for joining us on the Paracast.
Always a pleasure, Gene.
Paracast, featuring Gene Steinberg, is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
You don't sit behind a desk every day to earn a living. You're out and about making it happen. And sometimes you get a little bit behind on your paperwork, you know, like bookkeeping and paying your taxes. It's easy to get behind on paying your taxes. It happens to the best of us. And you know what happens next. The big bad IRS comes knocking on your door. And when that happens, you need to call the good old boys at the Tax Doctor. Let them do what they do best. Deal and negotiate with the IRS so you pay the lowest you can in back taxes that the law allows. We are a 100% U.S.-based company, and we've saved our clients millions over the years in back taxes. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, call my friends right now at the Tax Doctor and learn more.
800-985-1610. 800-985-1610. 800-985-1610. That's 800-985-1610.